Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a cool, refreshing glass of ginger ale. Every week at this time, we play the game. It's an easy game to play. You think up the questions, and we provide a quartet of dazzling intelligences who try to think up the answers. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions with the correct answers. For every question our quartet fails to answer, the sender gets $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. So you can make $15 if our experts miss out, which they occasionally do. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now, may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please is a catch-as-catch-can and happy-go-lucky program as unrehearsed and free as the movement of the wind. This evening, we present the following as our quartet of experts. Franklin T. Adams, the man with a long memory, and known to you all as the conductor of the famous humorous column, The Cunning Teller, in the New York Post. Oscar Levant, pianist and composer, the man with a musical memory. And John Kieran, sports authority and general walking encyclopedia. We feel ourselves particularly fortunate in presenting as our guest of honor this evening the Dean of Vassar College, Dean C. Mildred Thompson, who is an authority in the field of American history, particularly post-Civil War history. I can't help feeling that the Dean should be sitting in my chair, nor can I help feeling that it's lucky for me that she isn't. Now, remember, for each question that's missed by our board this evening, Canada Dry rings up $10, and that's paid out to the sender, plus $5 for the use of the question. Now, Miss Thompson and gentlemen, if you're ready, I am, and we'll begin with a question sent to us from Marion M. Widman of Norroton, Connecticut. The question seems directed particularly and especially at Dean Thompson. I don't think that any of the gentlemen will be able to tell me. When Vassar was founded, how many clothes hooks were allowed each girl and why?
Vassar was founded in 1861.
Yes, that's so far you're all right, Miss Thompson.
Yes, I think I know that. And I heard that they had 2 clothes hooks, one to hang on the everyday dress, and she took it off at night, and one for the Sunday dress.
My information is somewhat different from yours, Miss Thompson.
Well, they weren't hooks, they were pegs.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon. I should have known better than to have an expert with as precise knowledge as yours on this program. I'm quite sure you're right, though I understand that the 2 hooks in those days were meant, one for the extra dress, as you say, that the girl wasn't wearing, and the other for her nightgown, if I may say so.
Well, you wouldn't expect me to be so indelicate, huh?
No. On the other hand, Miss Thompson, I fail to see why you should expect me to be so indelicate. Miss Thompson, how many wardrobe trunks does each girl allow today, do you suppose, when she comes to Vassar? So things must be very different these days.
Yes.
I have an idea. They probably have 2 wardrobe trunks now instead of 2 hooks. Well, I think we'll allow you 100% on that because I feel sure that your information is much more precise than mine, Miss Thompson. See what you can do with the second. The question coming from Chicago, Illinois, and thought up by Miss Betty Cleary. A long time ago, Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote of a friend, "Fate tried to conceal him by naming him Smith." I have 2 hands up already. What does this mean, Miss Adams and Mr. Kieran? I'm not going to ask you what the name of that Smith was, by the way. Not yet. I'm going to ask you to name 5 persons who foiled fate by becoming famous in spite of the handicap of being named Smith. I'm going to ask you to leave out, if you don't mind, the 2 Smith brothers, either or both of them. Mr. Kieran.
John Paul Jones.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, you want it? It's the same name?
Yes, the same name.
Oh, well, that's easy.
Mr. Kieran will withdraw for about 2 seconds. And Mr. Levant, will you come to bat?
Mine's a delegate. My former wife's name was Smith, but I don't know if she became famous or not.
Haven't you followed up on these things at all, Levant? Well, it's interesting to get that bit of autobiography. And in a few times, you may become famous. So, Mr. Kieran.
The glamour girl of the movies,
Smith.
Yes. One that's...
Mary Pickford.
Well, yes, but you misinterpreted the question.
I mean people who kept the name of Smith and became famous in spite of it. You see, Miss Smith had to become Mary Pickford in order to become famous. Miss Adams.
Sidney Smith.
Sidney Smith, who was?
Who was? A writer.
A writer? What century?
Oh, 18?
No, 19. Early. He probably was born late in the 18th century. Sidney Smith, yes.
How about a Smithfield hand?
S.F.
Smith?
S.F. Smith? Who's S.F. Smith?
Fate tried to conceal him by naming him Smith. S.F. Smith, the author of America.
Yes. Well, that was the Smith to whom Mr. Holmes was referring. Yes. But I want five others in addition to him. We have one, given by Mr. Adams, Sidney Smith. Four other famous Smiths. Oh, there are lots of famous Smiths.
Smithsonian Institute.
That was Smithson. There was a man named Smithson, Mr. Levant. Mr. Adams?
Queenie Smith.
An acrobat. Queenie Smith, an acrobat. Yeah. All right, Mr. Levant?
In a fair way.
All right, we'll let in Queenie Smith. Because the most famous Smith of all is the famous the Village Black.
Smithy.
Yes. Who else? That gives us only
Smith two. Ballou. That's not very good.
No, we have to get real Smiths tonight.
Well,
three more, Mr. Adams?
Alfred E. Smith.
Oh, that's of course.
I'm sorry.
E. Smith. Yes, the Empire State Smith. That's
a baseball pitcher named Smith. Go ahead, John.
I bet that's true.
Jerry Smith.
All right. That's four.
You wouldn't call Goldsmith a famous Smith.
Thank you, Miss Thompson. I would like very much to allow that in.
That comes hard.
Pay for that. Miss Adams?
Miss Smith, I don't know her first name, but she founded a rival college.
Is that right, Miss Thompson?
Sophia Smith.
Yes, those would be fine. Very good. Horton Smith, the golfer, Mr. Shearing, how would that be? And of course, Miss Thompson, I'm surprised that you didn't mention Captain John Smith, who has some reputation in our history. Adam Smith, the author of The Wealth of Nations, Mr. Adams, gentlemen.
The Smiths of Ancient Rome.
I beg your pardon?
S-M-Y-T-H-S.
Very well, I won't contradict you. Here's another question coming from Ogden S. Conkey of this city. May I ask you to name five plays which have appeared on Broadway at any time and whose titles mention the names of cards or card turns? Now, I'm not going to ask. Please don't mention numerals, not 1, 2, 3, 4.
What cards? Calling cards?
No, the other kind of cards. You know the other, playing cards, yes. Mr. Stern?
If I were king.
Yes, that's one. Mr. Adams, Mr. Levant, big question.
Thank you. Hit the deck.
Hit the deck would be a very good one, that's two. Think it's more cards.
I got a good one.
All right, Mr.
Bury the dead. Bury the dead cards.
Oh, we're going pretty far afield.
Why not? Bury the dead.
You want to impose that on me?
Well.
Oh, I'll give you 25% credit on it. Mm-hmm. How about Miss Thompson?
Isn't there a jack-o'-lantern?
Was there?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes, that's right. That's three and a quarter. Mr. Adams?
A pair of sixes.
A pair of sixes. Yes, pair would be very good. Mr. Kieran?
Yellow jack.
No, that's blackjack.
Yellow Jack, very good. Yes, Yellow Jack, that's quite right. Sidney Howard, I think, wasn't it? Mr. Levant, another one?
Mr. Penn passes by.
That's a very good one. Mr. Penn passes by. The word passes, very good.
Ooh.
I've got another one, Mr. Levant.
This is pretty.
Good.
Waterloo Bridge.
Oh, two of them, because Lou is an 18th century card game.
Lou?
Yes, did you know that?
No, Lou is gone.
No, go to the head of the class. That's very good. There was a play called The Solitaire Man, written by Mr. and Mrs. Spiewak, I think, some time ago. I think of any others? I must say this and get it off my chest. Didn't Robert Sherwood write a play called The Road to Rummy? Something of that sort?
No.
Oh, this is all.
Three Sisters by Chekhov.
Yes, and not no numerals.
Well, but you can have three kings, though.
Mr. and Mrs. Herbert Birdquist of New Hampshire asked you to do the following. You take a young lady out. By the way, Miss Thompson, do you mind transforming yourself in imagination into a gentleman just for the moment? You to take a young lady out and describe your evening in song titles. The first question is, whom did you take? And that means you have to give me a song title in which the title is the name of the girl, Miss Adams.
Well, the name of the girl, I...
Well, or something of that sort. Miss Thompson.
Annie Laurie.
Annie Laurie, very good. Did you have another one, Mr. Levant?
Well, it's just the same thing. I had as sweet as apple cider.
I sounds that.
I never got over that line.
That makes it more intimate. All right, we've got two girls. Where did you take them? Oh, your song title has to answer the question. Where did you take them? Mr. Levant.
Sitting down at St. James Infirmary.
That's a good one.
Did
you take the young lady?
Huh?
The morbid Mr. Levant. Miss Thompson, what are you going to
do? Tin Pan Alley.
Tin Pan Alley? Is that a song?
No.
Mr. Levant?
It's always the name of a very dull piece in a magazine, but it's never a song.
Never a song. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Levant knows Miss Thompson.
He does.
I've written one of those dull pieces, Cousin.
One?
That's
You could take her to the ball game.
Way down from the Suwannee River, Mr. Devant, have another one?
Have Mo Burke take her out to the ball game.
Or take her out to the ball game. Very good. Now, how did you spend the evening? How did you spend the evening? A song titled Mr. Levant.
Well, you could either dance cheek to cheek or back to back, depending on how you feel.
Or dancing
very
in
good.
The dark.
I beg pardon?
Dancing in the dark.
Dancing in the dark. Mm-hmm. Yes, I hope that you're...
That goes one step farther than I did.
I missed that one. Well, a number of others. Waiting for the Robert E. Lee, which would be a very dull thing to wait to spend the evening. Finally, what did she say when you left her? What did she say when you left her? Miss Adams.
It'll be a hot time in the old town.
Thank you very much. Yes, to the van, Miller?
No, 1,000 times no.
Give that bad luck. Give just that bad luck, Mr. Levant. Yes, well, my heart belongs to Daddy. Well, we've got the young lady pretty well sewed up. The three Kessler sisters have clubbed together, the three Kessler sisters of this city, have clubbed together to work out the following question. Name an American lady who defied the manners or customs of her time by doing the following unconventional thing. The first American lady smoked cigars. That would be whom? Miss Adams.
Amy Lowell.
That would be Amy Lowell, yes. That's quite right. Or is there another that you know of, Miss Thompson?
No, it's just Amy Lowell.
Amy Lowell. Mm-hmm. Your acquaintance does not include any other famous ladies who smoke cigars? Never caught on?
Not famous.
Not famous. And you don't care to mention the infamous ones. I quite understand. One who defied the manners or customs of her time by wearing trousers. This would be quite some time ago.
Dietrich.
Nowadays, yes, Mr. Levant. Mr. Adams?
You don't mean Amelia Bloomer.
No, I don't. Miss Adams, do you mind if I make a subtle distinction between trousers and bloomers for the time being?
Not for the nonce.
No, perhaps not for the nonce, but there is a distinction otherwise. A bloomer is not precisely a trouser.
How about Marlene Dietrich?
Well, Mr. Levant mentioned her, but she doesn't defy the conventions of our time because a lot of girls do wear trousers and slacks. Mr. Chair?
I didn't hear. Two surgeons. It's Dr. Mary something that was about...
Walker. Very good. Mr. Adams and Miss Thompson both came in on the Walker. Yes, Dr. Mary Walker, I think around Civil War time.
Mr. Fatiman, I guess. Was George Sands before Amy Lowell? She smoked a nice cigar, if I remember.
She's not an American.
I think you're quite
he
right.
He didn't say American.
I did say American, but I'm very glad to get that extra bit of information about cigar-smoking ladies.
Hang around. You'll find out.
I bet I'll find out a lot from you. Yes, Dr. Mary Walker... wore trousers, all in the 60s, I think. A very famous surgeon, I think, during the Civil War, unless I'm much mistaken. And that leads us to the third part of our question. One who entered the medical profession very early indeed. This is before the Civil War.
Not Jerome Power. He's been a doctor now for 5 or 6 years.
Can you think of one? Mr.
Not Florence Nightingale.
I'm an American. An American. Oh.
Miss Baker, what?
Mary Baker, yes.
Was she your...
Clara Barton. No, sorry, she was a nurse. When I say medical profession, I mean who actually received a degree. There was one, Elizabeth Blackwell. Well, that, you remember now, Miss Thompson?
Yes.
I believe that is the proper answer. There's only one wrong so far. And what American lady refused to bear her husband's name?
Lucy.
Miss Thompson?
Lucy Stone.
Lucy Stone, yes. How long ago was that? Because nowadays that's all died out.
I think
that's the Stone Age.
The Lucy Stone League, does it still have any strength in the company?
It's taken for granted now. You can do that without belonging to the Stone
League. I'm lucky they can get another name now.
That gives us 3 out of 4, and we were supposed to get 3 out of 4. J. Cullen McIntyre from Alston, Massachusetts. Ask the following, what seems to me a very interesting question. What vote is required to do each of the following? What vote is required to first change the income tax rate?
And not a lot of cigars.
Yes, but I mean actual voting. What proportion of the voting of the House and Senate is required to change the income tax rate? Mr. Adams.
2/3.
No, a simple majority. A simple majority, Mr. Adams, will is the price to change the income tax rate. What vote is required to declare war? Ms. Thompson?
Majority.
A simple majority, yes. The same as the answer to the first question. And what vote is required to limit debate in the Senate? Mr. Kieran?
2/3.
2/3. And we draw a very interesting moral from this question. Would you care to draw it for us, Ms. Thompson?
Well, it looks as if talking were more important than the Craven Wall,
or
Damon Incombe.
Yes, it does begin to look that way, doesn't it? It's a very odd fact that money can be taken from citizens. Money can be taken from citizens, legitimately, of course, and war can be declared, a very important measure, by the passage of by a simple majority in the House and Senate. Whereas to get the Senate to keep quiet requires two-thirds vote. Now, as far as I can see, we have lost... No, we have lost absolutely nothing. And if our show were being televised, you'd see a perfectly self-satisfied look on the faces of our experts, at least so far. All right, Mr. Cross, you want to go to it?
Well, thank you, Mr. Fadiman, for giving me an idea. If our show really were being televised tonight, our audience would now see our sound effects man holding a Canada Dry bottle in his hand. And everyone would recognize it instantly, for the Canada Dry ginger ale bottle is a familiar sight all over the world. And now our television audience would see him removing the foil-covered cap from the bottle. And now, as he pours the ginger ale into a crystal glass, our audience would hear and see the ginger ale falling in a dancing cascade of shimmering bubbles. At this point, I would take the sparkling glass, hold it before the camera, and invite every one of you to join me in a delicious toast to health and happiness. A toast in Canada Dry, the champagne of ginger ale.
And then, Mr. Cross, I'd show my stopwatch to our television audience to prove that your Canada Dry toast has taken exactly 55 seconds. So we go on now to the next question. Oh, by the way, Miss Thompson, this comes from Vassar itself, from Miss Dorothy Foley of the Alumni House of Vassar College, New York. And it's a question about colleges. What colleges were named for the following? What college was named for a railroad magnate? A railroad magnate. Matter of fact, there are two of them that I can think of. Two very famous colleges. We have to get three out of three on this. Mr. Adams, did you have an idea?
Wouldn't be Leland Stanford.
It would indeed. It would indeed. Don't be modest, Mr. Adams. You're quite right. Leland Stanford, the famous Central Pacific railroad magnate. John Hopkins would be another. What college is named for a minister? A minister. Mr. Adams again.
Paul the Wesleyans.
Well, yes, very good. I hadn't thought of that. That's very good indeed. Yes, there is Wesleyan, of course. I think perhaps of another even more famous.
Smith Crowley.
I don't know if that's true, Mrs. Van. Was that the true assumption?
No.
No,
John Harvard was.
Yes, that's quite right. John Harvard was a minister, ordained in England, and then came here. And I believe the college was named after him. When he died, he left a bequest of about 800 pounds, which helped Harvard become established and make Yale famous. what college was named after a brewer? This, I'm afraid, is a little too easy for me to talk. Yes,
who was
Matthew Vassar. I bet you don't know how much Matthew Vassar gave to Vassar, though, or Miss Thompson. You don't deal with such vulgar.
I think it was about $400,000.
Yes. Well, things have changed since John Harvard's time. The college business much better. These days, and it wasn't John Harvard's time. Yes, Vassar was named after a famous Poughkeepsie brewer. Well, we did get three out of three on that. The next question from William H. Purvis, Jr. of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, is a musical question, and it's directed particularly to Mr. Levant. Mr. Levant, would you mind stepping to the piano? I'm going to ask you to play the first of each of the following famous variations. I'm told by those who know something about music, I'm not one of them, this is really a very difficult question. Play the first variation of the Schumann Symphonic Variations for the piano.
Would you like to play the same?
I'd like you to play the variation, or anything which will enable us to recognize the variation. And that's perfectly correct. They tell me, Mr. Levant, that is the hardest of the three variations. See what you can do on the second and third. Can you give us the first of the Brahms variations on a theme by Haydn?
Haydn? That's for orchestra. I can give you the one on Handel, but not Haydn.
I'm sorry. I'd like to misspell it for you, but it says Haydn here.
Well, I can't do it.
God.
I'll get the records for you.
Information, please, has reached this is a critical point in our history. When Mr. Levant can't do it, that's new. So one wrong out of three so far. Can you give us the first of Beethoven's 32 variations?
I don't
the band. Two out of three is what we were required to get. That's very good. The next question comes to us from Thomas L. Stitch, New York, is the following. Name the author of each of these famous books and the name of at least one other book written by the same author. Now, the first is rather easy, I think. Uncle Tom's Cabin, the author, of course, is Miss Adams.
Another book that she wrote?
Yes, and won't tell us who it is.
Harriet Beecher Stowe.
Harriet Beecher Stowe. Name another book.
The Pearl of Orr's Island.
I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know. You have me completely. I'm sure that's right.
But that is absolutely right.
All right. Don't bully me. I'm sure you're right, Mr. Adams. Could we name one or two other books by Harriet Beecher Stowe that never became famous in Uncle Tom's Cabin? Could you, Miss Thompson, think of
another?
Mr. LeVant, do you have another in mind?
No.
There was one, I think, that dealt also with the slavery issue. Dred? Wasn't there about one about Dred Scott?
No.
I think so. I'm not sure. Another was The Minister's Wooing. And she also wrote a book called A Key to Uncle Tom's Cabin, which apparently no one...
No one needed it.
Who wrote Pilgrim's Progress, and what else did he or she write? Mr. LeVant.
I'm afraid. These people know it better than I.
Well, you better let them handle it, then.
I know who wrote it, but I don't know.
You have to answer both parts of the question.
Miss Thompson.
I can't answer both parts.
Kelly, I've got them down.
You do the next.
Bunyan's Progress.
Good. John Bunyan, of course, wrote Pilgrim's Progress, and he also wrote The Life and Death of Mr. Badman, and a book called The Holy War, and one called Grace Abounding to the Chief of Sinners.
That's
probably one of the most catchy titles I've ever heard of. One wrong out of two, which means that Mr. Six is going to receive the sum of $10 courtesy of Canada Dry. I think that's the first time I've caught our expert this evening. Mr. D. Gold of Miami, Florida. Well, this is a very timely question. What Ring Lardner used to call the World Series is practically upon us. And his question is based upon World Series. Identify a Major League Baseball manager who won pennants in both leagues. Have two hands up. Mr. LeVant first.
Mr. Kerr knows it, but he's too modest.
Too modest.
McCarthy of the Yankees.
Joe McCarthy, yes.
He won for the Cubs.
Yes, that's right. You don't know the date, so would you like to take a
Time? Help me, John. It was in 19. Go ahead.
Need your help, Stern.
Chicago.
1931? 30? 29?
Chicago, 29. You got it. Yeah. Boy, can you count, Mr. LeVant. And the Yankees and, lots of times.
Well, he's won over four times anyway.
Well, yeah, five times.
Six times.
32, 35, 36, 37.
No, not 35. 36, 37, 38, and 39. That's exactly right, Mr. Stern. Thank you very much. Now, what Major League Baseball manager won pennants as manager of two different teams and only two in the same league? Not the manager of any more than two. The manager of two different teams in the same league. Mr.
Pat Moran, the late Pat Moran of Pittsburgh, Massachusetts. He won with the Phillies in 1915 and with the Cincinnati Reds in 1919.
Do you have to know all these things to make a living, Mr. Chair?
No, it's fine.
I think that's pretty good. Question you do with it. What Major League Baseball manager won pennants as manager of three different teams in the same league? Let me hear it again.
Oscar.
I'll do the first thing. Bill, you go ahead.
Mildwell, McKechnie.
That's right.
That's sharing it between you, gentlemen. Yes. St. Louis in 28, Cincinnati in 39, Pittsburgh in 25. Karen, I suppose, as usual, you're too bashful to give us an idea of who's going to win the World Series.
I'll take a chance on the Yankees.
All right, I hope everybody heard it. The next question from R. Klein of Washington, D.C., is again a question about writers. I'd ask you to identify these writers, who are quite well known, from the following hints. Now he is the most honored poet of his land, and once he was an assistant barkeeper in a New York saloon. I'm sure.
John Masefield.
John Masefield, yes. Do you know where the saloon was, Mr. Chairman?
I was down in lower New York somewhere. He also worked in carpet mills in Yonkers. That's three.
Then that's when he was promoted, yes. Have anything to add, Mr. Adams? I know you know the answer to that question. I don't like the word assistant barkeeper. No one says barkeeper. Barkeep. Who was a lighthouse engineer and lawyer before he took to the South Seas and wrote adventure stories? Mr. Chairman, you look very intelligent. You have your hand up.
Yes,
Herman
Melville?
No, sorry. He never was a lighthouse engineer, I don't believe. Mr. Adams?
Stevenson.
Stevenson is right. We should come in before that. That spoils our story. This poet was a homeless vagabond in the streets of London. He sold matches and earned a small living opening carriage doors. Who would that be, Mr. Stern?
Isaac William Shakespeare.
No, I don't think so.
Well, he opened carriage doors.
He did hold horses. There is a legend to that effect. I don't think he sold matches. The proper answer is the poet Francis Thompson, who wrote this very great religious poem, The Hound of Heaven. That gives us only one out of three on that, which means that our client of Washington, D.C. received $10 to the Canada Dry. Might have time to start the next one. Mr. Chilov of this city says, if you were lost in a place which would be described musically as follows, where would you be? Mr. LeBaron?
In the woods. Babes in the Woods by Jerome Kern.
That's quite right. Babes in the Woods by Jerome Kern. I'm afraid that...
I'd like to sing it
all the time. All the time we have this evening. We seem to have been thrown for a total loss of $20. Now, Mr. Cross, would you like to take over briefly, and then I'll be back with the lineup for next week.
Sparkling Canada Dry water really makes a lot of difference in the taste of your favorite drink. This fine club soda adds just the right amount of tangy flavor, and the sparkling goodness lasts on and on. Now, this flavor and long life is the result of a series of scientific developments. Water, triple filtered and alkalized for purity and goodness. Carbonation, by the famous pinpoint carbonation process that means millions of smaller bubbles and a long-lasting sparkle. And every step in the making of this sparkling water is carefully checked by graduate chemists whose job it is to guard the purity and uniformity of Canada Dry beverages. So you see, there is reason why so many people insist on sparkling Canada Dry water. Why it's the most popular club soda on the market today. Now here's Mr. Fadiman with Who's Who on next week's program. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you. Dean Thompson, won't you accept Canada Dry's thanks for lending us your presence this evening? Now next week, Miss Adams and Miss Kieran will both be on tap, and we'll have two guests. One of them, Christopher Morley, has been with us before, and we'll be happy to welcome him again. Mr. Morley's new novel, Kitty Foyle, is to appear shortly, and I think you must all know him as one of America's most genial essayists and critics. Our second guest will be the noted economist, writer, and lecturer, John T. Flynn, who is the author of God's Gold, A Life of John D. Rockefeller, and of other books on economic subjects. Now, to all our listeners, we say, please send your questions along. If you have a stumper to stump our board of experts, let's have it. There are $5 in it for you if we use your question, and another $10 if we fail to answer it correctly. So you can win $15 in all. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Your neighborhood stores have Canada Dry ginger ale and sparkling water in convenient sizes for every occasion. The large family size is very economical, costing only 15 cents plus bottle deposit. And remember, too, you'll find Canada Dry ginger ale and sparkling water at clubs, restaurants, hotels, and wherever fine beverages are sold. This is Milton Cross saying good night for Canada Dry until next week at this time.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.